This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
This is Everything Elite, the world's best podcast devoted exclusively to All Elite Wrestling and the Elite Extended Universe. Also devoted, apparently, to too much talk about animal feces last week. There was a guy who was really mad about it. I'm joined by a man who loves to talk about animal feces. It's Mike Spears. What's up, Mike?
Hey, y'all. It's your old pal, Iron Mike Spears. It's not that I enjoy talking about animal feces, it's just I never thought that animal feces would become such a facet of my life, and that's just kind of that. Luckily, don't have many additions to add to the Charles Mingus, a guy to potty train your cats, and I'm not going to allow this to go on much longer, but you know, I'm here. It's cold and wet up in the compound. It's like we had spring and now we don't in South Carolina. It's kind of wild. Were you getting any of that insane weather as well, Aaron? Like it feels seriously like we are in, it feels like that we are in February or March right now in South Carolina.
Yeah, it's gone back to being cold. I got better from being sick and am now maybe sick again, or it's allergies. Can't really tell, but I'm fucking miserable. So it's been great. Nate, you're also here, and I just trust that you're going to bring a cheerier mood to the podcast.
I'm not really in a cheerier mood. I'm not sick, thankfully. We do have the same just sort of shitty, dreary weather here. I do appreciate that one guy complained about talking about animal feces on the show, so you let off the show with it, and we jumped right back into more animal feces talk. That's the Everything Elite promise. But yeah, you know, I was in a pretty bad mood today. Generally, I really thought, we're not going to have a fun show because Aaron's feeling down. But then even like a pretty uneven and weird Dynamite was like, at least had enough good on it that I'm like, well, you know, that lifted me out of my, you know, annoyed work frame of mind, tired of fucking, you know, emailing morons, etc.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty hard, frankly. I mean, this, I guess, is a spoiler for how I felt about the show, but pretty hard to bring me down when your show kicks off with Yuji Nagata on American television. So that was pretty exciting. So I'm excited to talk about Blue Justice on this show. If you want to know more about cat feces, make sure you're following us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car, Nate's at Epitasis, Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast, whatever podcast app you use, just hit that old subscribe button on the Everything Elite feed, and you'll get these as soon as they come out, usually on Thursdays. Give us a rating and review, a 5-star rating and review if you use the Apple Podcasts app. And the best way to support the show, as always, is to head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. It's double or nothing month, pay-per-view month, which means we'll have a lot of fun content and a live instant reaction show after double or nothing, as we do after every pay-per-view. So make sure you join us. We'll kick it off with Elite or Delete. I know somebody's going to talk about Yuji Nagata before I get a chance to, so I'll just ride your wave. So, Nate, what do you want to talk about, bud? What was your favorite thing?
Interesting. Okay, we'll see if that's the case. I think there was one segment on this show that stood out above the others, but it's not what I'm going to talk about. I am instead going to talk about the segment that most exceeded my expectations. This, like I said, this show did have a lot that I really liked. You know, at least three or four segments that I thought were great, and then really spent the rest of the time just trying to frustrate me as much as possible and do its damnedest to bring me down off that high from the beginning of the show. The thing that most exceeded my expectations, the Young Bucks versus SCU match, I thought was a lot better than I was expecting, basically. You know, going to this match, I was like, hey, this is a totally solid pro wrestling story. Great thing to do with a, you know, new champion heel team. You've got a historically important tag team, especially on the indies. and especially with Chris Daniels in SCU, and they've set up this whole stip, the whole Shawn Michaels, Ric Flair stip, where if they lose, they're going to break up. You've got these heels that are getting over in their new heel persona, and they've, you know, identified this team as the team they really looked up to and idolized and became friends with and went up and down the roads with. And I was kind of like, okay, so it's, you know, a fine little story. I guess fine is maybe a little unfair. A good pro wrestling story. You know, I don't really know how much Chris Daniels has left in the tank. Frankie Kazarian can still, you know, go out there and go at a professional level. But a lot of the matches is probably going to be, you know, maybe trying to hide Chris Daniels or something like that. So wasn't expecting a lot from the match. But basically this match exceeded my expectations in that Chris Daniels was gushing blood, busted open, bleeding all over the place, pouring blood on the Young Bucks. And they did a great job in this story, in this match, I thought, of telling a story that really got the crowd behind SCU. They did not want SCU to lose this match, even though, you know, SCU is like not a team at the top tag team level of AEW, I don't think. You know, you look at your slightly more cynical fan reactions, I think, on Twitter, and most people are like, hey, let's, you know, fucking break up SCU already and move on. But the fans in the building didn't want that. They wanted SCU to win. They wanted the babyfaces to win. They wanted the heels to lose the title. And I was just along for the ride. I'm like, you know, they might do it. Mike half-assed talked me into, you know, maybe SCU will win this match. They didn't really get a reign together in this company yet because Scorpio Sky, you know, was involved in their initial reign. So maybe they want to send off Chris Daniels with the title reign in AEW. But no, the right team won in the end. Young Bucks win. With, what's the word? With, not with authority. That was the WWE trade card game. With, not emphasis.
With authority was more like NBA Jam.
What's with prejudice? That's what I was looking for. Like the legal
term.
There
you go.
They won with prejudice. And, you know, the Young Bucks were fucking dynamic heels. They really were owning their prick personas. Doing the half-ass or the fake sarcastic crying I love you spot to Chris Daniels. So yeah, that I came away from that like, yes, that could not have gone any better. That was the maximum you can get out of that match on this night with this team and this storyline. And then they did immediately turn around and piss me off by jumping to the back for a pointless locker room angle instead of giving us the crowd, you know, giving SCU their flowers.
It was something that I felt like this was Christopher Daniels' best performance since everything pre-Dynamite, to be honest. Like, you have to go back to, like, Double or Nothing 1 against Strong Hearts or the match he had against Shima at, it was Fighter Fest, so they had that match. But this rocked. This was an incredibly strong match. Daniels went for it, and they even made a way that like, a botch didn't feel like a botch. It felt like it was a part of the match because he had so much blood loss and that, you know, like he was really overextending himself. So like the first time he went for the best moonsault ever, he slipped off the top ropes and it actually kind of looked really cool the way that was. And just like told a really great story. It's something where I did kind of speculate wildly as I'm one to do on like about like the ways that could have gone with this, and they picked the simplest, most direct way that's like, okay, SCU is done, and now we can later figure out what you do with Frankie Kazarian now without an SCU. Like, Scorpio Sky, even though he's turned heel and hasn't done anything with him for months, is still a part of the SCU intro, and I always kind of figured that, like, if there's going to be, like, some breakup thing, I kind of saw it maybe happening with, like, SCU dropping the titles eventually to Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky and that being it and having that thing of like, oh, the guy who ended it being Scorpio Sky. But this match rocked. The Young Bucks, yet again, I mean, best match of the night, I would say. And just like always, we have to give a shout out to Doc Gallows. Just whenever he's whenever you see him on camera, your eye just gravitates to him. And it's something that makes it very difficult for me sometimes to take the Young Bucks matches seriously when he's out there because he's just such a wild card out there. And I mean, all-time great fit tonight, guys. I mean, he had the leather, he had the leather fedora, he had the Talking Shop summer t-shirt, and then he had on one of the greatest French jackets I've seen of all time. But the match rocked, and the to the back was a little like, I mean, if you're going to break up this tag team, you are going to do the most impact thing possible and make them go to the back. So it sucked, but that was very fitting.
Right. Maybe it was a tribute to their time in TNA. Maybe that was the idea.
I want to shout out Everything Elite comedy correspondent Patrick Cosmos, who had these two great lines about Luke Gallows tonight in the Discord. Another good reason to join the Patreon and come to the Discord. First, he said, Gallows looks like if Mick Foley just described Dude Love to Triple H instead of keeping it for himself. But then he followed that up with, Doc Gallows looks like if there was a one-man band that covered Guns N' Roses songs at a Pride parade.
That was good. Yeah, Patrick Cosmos has very few people, maybe nobody else, tweets at such a high volume, and I still find them good. You know, most people that tweet at a high volume like that, it's questionable if I can find them tolerable. Whereas he has a very high hit rate.
Yeah, he's very good. He's very funny. So it's a great account, and he's great in our Discord. So join. The bad thing about doing our show immediately after the Dynamite episode is I got a work call during this match and missed the entire fucking match. And so I have no clue what happened, and I couldn't watch it before we recorded. But I did see the finish, so I'll have to go back and watch this. But it looked like it over-delivered.
4.25 stars, AB.
Oh, okay. I'll watch it. I'll go back. Mike, I mean, it sounds like you like that a lot, but what's your Elite pick for the show?
Yeah. That was my favorite thing on the show by a good margin. And
all right, I definitely skipped it. It wasn't really even my favorite thing on the show, but I was trying to give you guys one of the easier great segments.
No, yeah. Just like looking at it.
There's two other options, Mike. It's the main event and then the UG and Moxley.
Yeah, I'll talk
those
about
those are the options on the show.
I'll talk about the main event because I know that I probably am going to diverge pretty heavily with Aaron on this. I thought that this was very much the Darby match, and we've talked about the Darby match and how we've gotten kind of, we felt like they've kind of got long in the tooth, but I feel like that in a way of blowing off the Darby match, this main event with Miro winning the TNT championship, he is now the 5th TNT champion. I felt that like the idea that Darby kept on like trying to pull out tricks that he got out of other matches with. And I felt like that was really kind of cool. Like him going for the code red, that getting kicked out of, him going for flash bends, that getting kicked out of, him going for arm bars, him getting out of that. I thought that was a nice and kind of a smart little nod to how Darby was winning these matches by the skin of his teeth. But now we have someone who is just too powerful and sees through it. The coffin drop catch was a little much. Like that was something that I will fully admit. Like that was when I was like, oh, okay. But everything else with that was really cool. Miro looked sick. Darby looked valiant in defeat, like basically being absolutely murdered and having to be having the referee like make it be a referee's decision. Loss, he did not tap out in the game over. But you know, it was not the match I think anyone was really expecting. But I felt like that by kind of playing off the fact that Darby is someone who was getting by the skin of his teeth for so long, but he came across someone who just that stuff did not work on. I feel like that made this a more compelling match than the usual Darby defenses that we've been seeing as of late.
Okay, yeah, I just made it too complicated picking the Young Bucks match for mine. Should have just gone with my genuine thoughts. I thought this match was pretty much perfectly worked. This is exactly how I would have laid out this match. This is exactly what I thought this match should have been and was and would be. You know, they set it up with Darby taking the huge bump last week and he's coming in not 100%. And you have Miro as the heel on the warpath who's going to come out and destroy him before the bell. And then Darby being the guy who just won't die. You know, he's been getting through his matches by the skin of his teeth. Yes. But that's also just part of his character is that he's going to take a beat down and he's not going to die. And he's going to keep coming and keep getting back up because that's what makes him the babyface that all the kids love. So yeah, I thought you know, they gave both the guys the perfect amount. Like, Miro was dominant throughout. Like you said, Miro had solved all of his tricks and signature spots that he used to win the other matches and escape. You know, he that stunner, he caught him on the float over stunner that he does. He caught him with the dive to the outside, which was great. The execution on the coffin drop catch was like a little goofy. You know, it's like, well, he's still on the ground. Like, how is that different than just getting hit by the coffin drop? But, you know, you kind of just fudge that because it's wrestling or whatever. Maybe he sits up and he's like seated when he catches him, and that makes it look, you know, 50% better, whatever. But yeah, I mean, perfect story. It Miro killing the guy, being dominant, Darby refusing to die, Darby eventually just getting in a situation where he's taking too much damage over this title reign and over the last 2 weeks, and gets caught in this submission that there's no hope of him escaping. You know, but all the fucking people in this match, just like superstar presences, superstar performances, down to like the facials, like Miro, just like next level intensity whenever he looks at guys. Darby, totally appropriately selling where he is in the match, where he's like the fucking fighter and he's in over his head, but he's not going to shy away from it. And Sting at ringside, like, there's that moment where Miro looks at Sting and he's like, yeah, I'm going to fucking kill him. And you see Sting not wanting to give Miro anything, not selling for him, but obviously concerned about Darby. Just fucking professional wrestling right there. And yeah, just, you know, great spots. That throw, that one-armed throw Miro did. I don't know, it's like a half-assed gourd buster or something, where Darby fucking lands right in those lower back and then like stands up and crumples and falls into a bump. Just awesome. Perfect match, basically. Wouldn't have had it any other way.
All right. I'll be the guy. That's fine. Yeah, you know, like a vacuum, I thought it was a really fun match up until the coffin drop catch, which I thought was a little goofy. Just because I think anybody who listens to the show knows that I hate like catching moves like that. I just think it sucks. It's like, you can't catch someone when you're lying on your back. That's impossible. Yes, Nate?
When Kyle O'Reilly would do those catches where he catches somebody in a submission, that was always cool to me.
Yeah, but this was, Darby landed on him.
Yeah, and no, this he just like took
allegedly
the move,
caught him.
But he had his arms around him, so it doesn't hurt for whatever reason. Yeah.
Right. And I was thinking at the time, I was like, well, I was even trying to like justify it. I was like, well, you could say, you know, Darby doesn't weigh that much. He could have like played that up, but they didn't really. It was just like, no, he just did that magical pro wrestling thing where you catch somebody when they try to jump on you. But my problem with the match was within context. In a vacuum, I had fun with it. But in context, Darby's, as we've discussed, Darby's whole thing is that, or has been in this promotion, that he basically gets his ass kicked and then just squeaks out a win at the end. Yet in this match, he was much more competitive with Miro than he has been with anyone else. And the point of this story is to get Miro over as a big ass kicker, as like a guy who can come in and dominate. So to me, it makes more sense for everybody if Darby had been more dominant in those previous matches, and then Miro appears more dominant by beating this dominant champion, especially if you're going to do a back and forth match, which this is something we discussed in the past too. It's like, you know, your TV main event probably needs to be an extended match. It probably can't be a 2-minute match, which I think makes sense. And I don't think I want to strongly disagree with the talk about that this should have been like a 10-second squash. Like, I just don't think that was the right thing for either character. But I think the way they built up Darby doesn't make sense in the context of this match. So it just kind of made that silly. Now, when you're just watching a pro wrestling show, you can forget that when 5 minutes in, they're just having a kick-ass match and you can just enjoy it and that's fine. But I think going along with my criticisms of the reign, this kind of fell right in with my concerns the whole time.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much agree with you. I agreed with you then that I would have liked to see Darby just get more wins, dominant wins over guys earlier in the show, instead of always having, you know, what if it has to be blow away main events where he has to go 50-50 with Preston Vance or whatever.
I was gonna say, was the most dominant when he had in his reign against Jungle Boy? Because it feels like that one even there was still like a 60-40 match. Like it was never Darby winning like authoritatively in this title.
Yeah, it's, there's probably one that I've forgotten that was like not a main event that was earlier in his reign, and it just doesn't come to mind. As we know, I'm not great at listening previous title challenges in AEW.
Nobody wants to hear me talk about the Jungle Boy match again, so I don't remember. I have bad brain, of course, so hard to say. But yeah, kind of just played into all that. But, you know, I think a reasonable way to end the Darby title reign, Miro makes sense as the next champion. Looks like they're setting him up for Lance Archer, perhaps at Double or Nothing. And that's a good first defense for Miro. And you get Miro going. Now, okay, a lot of discussion about, oh, well, why would you bring Miro in to do all the goofy stuff he did? And now you're just doing this. But to me, it's like, I don't know, maybe you had other shit planned for like the top of the card. And this gave Miro a chance to kind of do something that was fun. And now that you have an opportunity to do something else, you do it. Like Miro was already a star coming into the company. It's not like he had to be made a star. So I really don't have any concerns with them waiting to pull the trigger on a big Miro push.
Yeah, you always have to find stuff to do with people when they're not going to be part of the, you know, 1A, 1B, 2A, 2B programs. Like, that's like the challenge of pro wrestling. So he wanted to do fun video game stuff with the best friends we really respected when he came to this company. And I thought that feud pretty much enhanced everybody in the company. Or not everybody in the company, everybody in the feud. Like, the best friends had a great feud victory in there. Kip Sabian, who was like, you know, liable to be left by the side of the road there because they had to fire his tag team partner. And then, you know, people weren't super high on him in the first place. He got a great tag team program out of that. And now he has something to come back from with Miro in the future because they ran a great angle with him and Miro. And Miro, you know, got to show his personality, got to plug his Twitch channel, and then got to look like an absolute fucking crazy psychopathic killer. So it was a success on all fronts. I basically love Miro's run of this company so far.
All right, moving on to my elite pick. Yeah, I'm going to go with Blue Justice, the only blue life that matters, Yuji Nagata. I don't know. Am I? I think maybe I am just a guy who likes old wrestlers. I think maybe that's just part of my personality, perhaps. So to me, it was a lot of fun to see things like Yuji Nagata back on TNT after 23 years. I love the ties to Nitro. That was cool. But it's not just that, because above all that, Yuji Nagata came out and they had two really cool entrances, which were Tharos especially was loving. Everybody was loving in the Discord because you had Nagata come out to his New Japan theme. And then you had Mox come out to Wild Thing in an homage to Atsushi Onita. That was cool. And then they just put on like one hell of a pro wrestling match, especially for a 53-year-old guy. So I thought everything about this really worked.
Yeah, I really loved the presentation they did for this. They went the extra mile with the presentation, which is important to make it feel special. And they've, you know, been pretty good about in this promotion doing little things to make, you know, certain segments pop or certain shows pop. So having Rin Narita there was great because you got to have somebody from your own company backing you up. They had a Rocky Romero in the crowd, kind of gives it a big feel. Crowd had a great reaction for Yuji Nagata, like popped for his signature moves also. So that was cool. And then Moxley with the Wild Thing was badass. And I do think Yuji Nagata can still go. They didn't give us a New Japan epic. You know, they didn't give us a 18-minute New Japan epic here, which, you know, I'm not going to complain about because I've advocated for shorter matches on this show. I was a little annoyed it was the first match on the show. It's like they've really went and promoted this match very heavily for the last 2 weeks or whatever. Yuji Nagata was doing interviews. The social accounts were blowing up about it from New Japan, AEW. Yeah, you know, there was probably Moxley did interviews, all promoting this match, and then it's like, okay, it's the first match on the show, which I just hate. I want big matches at the end of the show. I think you should build a show like that. Moxley, I'm going to complain about just Moxley. Like, Moxley, motion, super over, delivers in a lot of spots. He doesn't really, when you get Moxley in there trading elbows with a New Japan guy, you kind of go, I don't know. You're kind of like, this is not Ishii and Shibata. This is not Suzuki and Ishii. I mean, granted, those are like all time hit each other really hard guys, but Moxley just his shit does not look super painful. I think that's why he's so great at death matches. Cause it's like, well, yeah, he's got his, you know, dopey little dive and he like kind of runs and pushes guys and these are his spots. And yeah, he's huge, but I don't know. His shit just doesn't look super stiff to me. So it's like, yeah, well, you know, that's why when he hits a guy with a light tube or a chair or barbed wire or whatever, it's like, okay, now the aura of Moxley matches the actual violence level because he's got these props.
I think the reason why they started the start of the show with this is like the idea that they like to spike the rating and then they want to
absolutely. Yeah. They certainly love putting like their second biggest segment on first and doing a high like energy work rate thing there. I don't like it. I hate it.
It's something though that with that, it still felt like that this would have been like the 9 o'clock top middle of the show match, like top of the hour match, especially considering like we all love Yuji Nagata. He was excellent in this match. And I would argue that our subsect of the internet was already hyped and like revved up for it. But like putting someone that other than like promos and all of that and clips as your opener and in your idea that this is like the second most important segment of the show, really bold. Like I felt like that was a pretty bold thing. One of my favorite things about this match, like y'all hit on a lot of the high points, was Eddie Kingston as Moxley's corner man. Like the way that like Eddie was like in the corner of the shots whenever they used the floor camera, and Eddie was like barking the entire time. Like he was like talking to Moxley, and he was like he was like trash talking the entire time, and was going like, Yuji Nagata is old. He doesn't have shit, and it just was awesome stuff, and it kind of gave this match a completely different feel with Ren Narita out there than Eddie Kingston out there. And you know, this match was not even 15 minutes. Like this match did not get out of the second quarter. I felt like that it hit all the notes it needed to. Got accidental blood, you know, which you know made the accidental blood that came later, and then other things happened later, you know, seem kind of, you know, by the time we got to like 9 o'clock, there was a lot of carnage that has happened accidentally on this show, but. It was a really solid time, and it was sick. And, you know, now they have to do the TNT challenge. So we've had Yuji Nagata shows up. I know that we're not probably going to be able to get some people out. I know we can't get Magnum Tokyo out there. Like, we can't do that. Suwa, you can get out there. But Dragon Kid and Don Fuji, let's get him back on TV. You know, let's bring him back out there. We got to get everyone from Nitro on there. Ultimo will work. I mean, if you let Ultimo set up a place where he can sell masks, Ultimo will be there. So that's the thing I'm hoping on, is that we get a lot more of like these throwback matches with people who appeared on Nitro. Like, what's Ernest the Cat Miller up to? Like, do we know what Ernest the Cat Miller is up to?
I want to say somebody mentioned that there was like an Ernest the Cat sighting at the Nightmare Factory or something recently. I feel like I remember half of that in a DM somewhere.
Scoop, scoop, scoop. So, yeah. Ernest the Cat Miller should be Miro's first TNT title opponent, is what Nate just proposed there. You know, hat tip EE, in case you're going to cite this elsewhere.
Yeah, the thing about Mox, I think we kind of discovered this when Mike and I did that. This is John Moxley, available on patreon.com/everythingelite, is that he's like one of the best wrestlers ever to not really be that good at anything in ring. Like, really nothing he does in the ring stands out, but he's just fucking really good. It's just like his whole package is really good.
Yeah, I think that's why deathmatch shit is like pretty. Yeah, it's like, oh yeah, you don't have to ignore that. Like, his dive looks like shit, and his forearms are like pretty soft. Like, I would take, you know, 30 John Moxley forearms. That's no problem.
But Mox was never meant to be this type of wrestler, right? Like, I mean, he was just a deathmatch guy.
Right, and then like an FCW guy.
Right, but like he was kind of miscast into this role.
Yeah, I think just his size, literally his size pushed him into a arena that he was not born for or something.
But he's kind of been squeezed into it in a funny way, you know, and it ended up working out. But yeah, he's not a natural. D-Lite, as we're talking about this, whoever missed the fucking
roll his eyes back in his head shot.
They got to it eventually.
They did, but it's like the one thing that you have to do in a Yuji Nagata match. So,
like, I was happy that the crowd popped for it, so that I kind of gave it a pass. He's like, "Yeah, all right." Yeah. But I have complaints about the direction almost every week.
Listener Elite Chelsea, I feel like Chelsea give this to her a lot, but she makes a lot of good points. And also, she's an $8 subscriber at patreon.com/everythingelite. She says, Matt Jackson making faces while someone shaves their pubes during the picture in picture. So, Nate, ooh, you probably missed
I did miss that.
There is a popular Venus. Well, I shouldn't say the name of the company.
I'm your Venus. That was
exactly.
Was not a leg shaving commercial back in the day.
Well, now they've got a pube shaving. Razor.
This is the downfall of Western civilization, of course, is that we talk about pube shaving on television.
Yeah, and a young woman in, you know, I'm not sure if it's underwear or like a bikini, but she's very tattooed. And then she starts, I mean, obviously because only tattooed people have loose enough morals to shave their pubes. So that's why it makes sense. Anyway, that's our listener elite of the week. I was thinking about Bill Simmons earlier. So, yep, these are our listeners. sorry, everybody.
I think about Bill Simmons a lot. It's fine.
Yeah, it's bad.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7 so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy Video Lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys, reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy Video Lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second. Door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is EUFY Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, EUFY Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Delete picks of the week. Nate, what do you got?
This fucking, I mean, this is So this is why I'm taking the obvious one, because I fucked up on the first segment and tried to put one past y'all. The fucking Pinnacle Inner Circle segment was just fucking horrendous. I hated it. The whole point of this feud was MJF getting away from Chris Jericho's, you know, WWE comedy skit bullshit. And like, no, the Pinnacle, we're going to be ass kickers. We're going to do violence. And they delivered on that. Like, the Inner Circle came back in a super violent backstage attack, and that was awesome. And then we got the super violent blood and guts match, and that was largely awesome. And then you get the goofy finish to that. And then you really just double down on the goofiness with this segment where, you know, they're having a little celebration, whatever. You can imagine the figure four. You can imagine the four horsemen doing this where they come out in their suits, you know, and they celebrate about being rich and all this, and they have women with them. That's fine. But then the fucking Inner Circle comes up on their little high school golf cart with a bizarre trailer in the back. And it turns out Chris Jericho's there. He's not even going to be gone from TV for a week. He's right back here, and he's brought a worse version of a WWE angle from 15 years ago. And it just sucked ass, and it was stupid. and they use this stupid hose of water to goad MJF into doing another match immediately after this big, gory, bloody match that should be a blow-off. Like, I hated it. It drove me insane. Those guys could have just fucking stood at the far end of the ring and not gotten any of the bubbly on them. They would have been totally fine. But no, they had to stand there and get, you know, a nice refreshing shower from Splash Mountain. There was an interesting part on the Sammy Guevara vlog this week, which we talk about on the Patreon, where we see Sammy in the aftermath of the Blood and Guts match, and he's talking about how frustrated he is. He's just, I'm very frustrated. He's very frustrated about the match. Doesn't say, you know, why exactly, but I would presume to read into that he's frustrated about the finish and frustrated about the reaction to the finish. And you just can't keep putting these guys out there and having them do these big prop angles and big prop finishes and big, you know, big special effect segments, and then just let them down with the special effects, and they fucking look like dog shit. And then you've sandbagged all your wrestlers, basically. And that's basically what I think happened here, is you had to have all these guys selling for a little rinky dink hose, and it sucked, and I hated it.
The one thing I'll say about that spot was the Pinnacle showed their ass. Like they made this hose look like it was just like knocking them dead. Like they were doing like cartoonish pratfalls.
They tried their best to make it work.
Yeah, they tried their best, but it just got to a point, and then we're getting another stadium stampede with if the Inner Circle loses, they must disband stipulation, which, I mean, at least it's not the WWE have a huge giant gimmick match, then the next week have a rematch in a straight normal match. So that's that. But like the promo itself, like the best thing that encapsulates the promo is the fact that FTR were fucking with the flowers off to the side, and Wardlow was hitting on the woman that came out with them. Like that was basically encapsulates, even before you got to the Inner Circle run, of the fact that like MJF is cutting like this, like, now I'm the king of the mountain. He had a crown on, and he was doing like all these things, and like everyone else in the segment was just kind of dicking around. And then you had the, as you said, just like the whole like WWFS run in there, and now we're getting a stadium stampede match, which, I mean, I know that like Lanza or Rich tweeted about this, but like weird tonal shift going from blood and guts, Jericho being tossed off the cage, to everyone bleeding like crazy, to stadium stampede, where last year we had lariats from people on horses, we had bar fights, we had a NFL mascot eating a Judas effect. Like, how are you going to make this like an escalation at this point? Like, I don't know how you make this match like a stadium stampede match, and like the overall vibe that they do in these kind of matches. I don't know how you make it more brutal at this point. So
right.
I'm kind of confused.
You can't. Yeah, it's not a weird tonal shift. It's just a bad tonal shift, I think. I'll throw him a bone. At least if we're doing another match right after the big gimmick match, at least they put like a stip on it. That's like an escalation where, hey, you have to break up the stable now. Like, so at least there's something at stake in that way. But yeah, you're going from what's been a literally blood and guts feud where they're all bleeding and dying in the cage and doing these crazy, you know, fucking spots in the steel cage and all this shit, to a match that is famously like a comedy match. And like, even if they go a different way with it, even if they said, no, this Stadium Stampede is actually, you know, going to be a knockdown drag out war, I don't think more people are going to bleed heavier than they did last week. That seems very unlikely to me. So, yeah, Mike, I agree that it just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, it sucked. There's really nothing much to add to that. Mike, did you have, who deleted that?
I deleted it.
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry. I don't feel good, guys. I'm not going to lie to you. And you know, the listeners who are like big Nate and Mike heads and are like, they wish Aaron would talk less, probably going to happen as this show goes on, because the more I talk, the more I cough. So, Mike, your delete.
I guess I'm going to do you a solid so you don't have to talk too much about this here. Let's talk about the Cody promo. It amused me, but not a good promo. But I also realized that weird things amuse me and tickle me in ways that do not necessarily apply to the normal viewer. Let me see what we have down here for the notes on this Cody promo, because it just went there. He was proud to be American.
Oh, I took dog shit notes on this because I hated it so much.
But tying together like segregation to like this, and then like Cody like having the tears going on with it, and then it was something where like it was a Mayor Pete ass promo, or a cocaine promo without the cocaine, and kind of like ended up to like with Cody versus Ogogo, which I mean that's the route you're gonna go with that. That makes total sense there. But like Cody made like a big thing about like I'm proud to be American, like X, Y, and Z, like talking about like music, talking about like all of this. Like really like it was something that like you could almost drop in like the I may not be X, Y, and Z, but I am ABC kind of like cadence to that. But he will be the American dream for one night only, which I mean, you're adding stakes to a match that didn't really need the stake to be added, other than Ogogo on Twitter just like playing up the point at this point. And it's something that he saw the reaction he got for his Game Boy tweet, and now he's just going all in there, which I mean, I don't blame him for it. But Cody in this promo, I've talked before, I think that the person that's been hurt the most with what's gone on here is Cody, because Cody's entire conceit is built on the fact that Cody needs to have a captivated audience. And this should have been like the kind of promo that like pre-COVID would have been like the big raw Ace Energy promo. But the crowd booed when he started to like try to do a USA chant, the crowd was like, no, we're not doing that. We're not doing that.
Well, they did do it. I
saw tweets that were people in the building say that people were booing the USA chant. So divergent opinions in the building.
Yes, but the chant happened, and then the booing stopped, and the chant continued. So I don't know if I can say it was a bad promo, because I do think it worked for most of the people in the building. I mean, there's like, it's, you know, if you're the person in the building chanting USA, that's pretty cringe. And if you're the person going on Twitter and being like, I said USA is bad, actually, it's like equally as cringe. But this promo in no way makes me like Cody Rhodes. It no way makes me want to see him win this match. In no way like engenders any sympathy from me for Cody Rhodes. But I just like the insane energy of it, the insane swing this was to think that he could step up and pull this off, like, and then
just
and
wild.
Then get and then get, you know, 70% of the crowd or whatever. I kind of have to say, you know, people like insane high-minded promos from wrestlers, whether they make sense or not. You know, it's like 80s wrestling had a lot of people talking about big ideas with nonsense words and wrestling terminology, and a lot of those people got over. That's kind of, you know, Cody's like chasing the dragon of doing a hard times promo, and he's like, I'm going to address race relations in America. And like, to think you could do that is so insane. And then for most of the crowd to be right along there with you is, Just an insane spectacle that I can't help but be like, pro wrestling, what the fuck? Who fucking knows? That's kind of where I stand on it. I do. It's so funny that Cody does these, you know, big premise, big high concept promos like this, where he's going to talk in poetics and he's going to have all this pre-written shit and do it like it's off the cuff. And it's totally at odds with his persona on the vlogs, where he's just like, you know, his frank, genuine self and like kind of a lovable prick, a swashbuckling asshole, as I called him. It's totally the opposite of what he does on TV, and it's so much more likable. he puts on this big persona of, you know, the American nightmare. Also, I'm the American dream, you know, the grandson of a plumber or whatever, which is like, it's just a funny guy Cody Rhodes is. It works for him for most of the AEW audience.
Yeah, like that's the insane thing about it. Like, he still has the ace energy. And imagine if he was the swashbuckling asshole doing like the politics speech. Like, that would have been actually might have come across, and everyone might have gotten less response, but it would have been more interesting.
Honestly, I fundamentally disagree that like 80% of the crowd was with him. I didn't hear that. I think like
I said 70%.
Well, I disagree with that even. It was like, it was stunning to me, the lack of reaction when he started off with like the very obvious jingoist America stuff. I was like, you're in fucking Jacksonville among a bunch of Rick and Morty wrestling fans. I'm shocked they're not like all in on this. And they weren't. They had to be goaded into the USA chant.
Well, I think he kind of gave them mixed signals in that he was saying, this is not very popular right now. I acknowledge that. I'm not saying that's wrong or whatever, but I'm going to say this about me. And then even when they started the USA chant and you had like part of the people booing or whatever, he's doing like the, you know, hey, you know, you don't have to do the chant now. That's fine thing. So he's kind of like half-assed dissuading people too. So there was no clear way for the audience to read those signals. You know, when he got to the end and he's talking about his beautiful daughter and he's got tears in his eyes, I think it's fair to say 70% of people were like, yeah, we love your daughter.
Yeah, that may be true. It's just like, obviously, none of us were the audience for this promo, so I'm not trying to evaluate it on those terms. But it was just, even when he got there, it was like, maybe after that, he started to make some sense, but it was all over the place leading up to that. I was like, where are we going here, buddy? Like, I could, and he kind of always does that. Like, even if I think back to the feud with Jericho, and he would have, where he clearly has these, like, oh, I'm going to make these fucking insane jumps, you know, from this thing to this thing. I'm going to tie it in and I'm going to blow the roof off. And yeah, it used to work for sure. And maybe in a full arena, this would have worked just the same. But it did feel like one of the worst Cody promos. Like, it did, even if you just grade it against Cody promos, I just didn't feel like he hit what he was trying to hit here.
Yes, I don't disagree with that. I think that's right. And I think Mike's right that, you know, his reliance on those full crowds is a lot of what made that, you know, sort of magic click for him, I guess. But yeah, this is a speculative. I mean, it was also, I mean, I think the biggest swing of any of his promos, none of the other promos were like, hey, I know everybody fucking hates America and rightfully so right now, but I'm going to solve it by talking about my billionaire owner of this company and my interracial marriage.
Let's like, bury that part.
How is this? We can achieve this in a 4-minute television wrestling promo? That seems like a tall ask.
Let's bury bootlicker Cody also while we're here. The ShadCon thing.
They all love their boss, man. Everybody in that company loves their boss.
Oh, yeah. I hate that so much. Did just like do a search for ShadCon union busting. Just to, when you talk about
sure.
That. Yeah.
Oh, but come on. Cody fucking named his dog Pinkerton. He loves union busting.
I thought it was Pink, not Pinkerton. Oh.
No, it's Pinkerton. It's like Yeti Pinkerton. Maybe that's their fucking kid's name. I don't know.
It's after the Weezer album. He really likes Across the Sea.
Yeah, sure. Sure. Okay, it's my turn. There's nothing else I really hated, but so I'm just going to take this moment to dance on my haters' graves, basically.
You hate your haters. Right.
Yeah. Let's talk about the women's division. There's been all this talk lately about how, oh, it was just injuries and the pandemic. And now, you know, they're showing why they always had this long-term plan. It's coming to fruition. Okay, on this show, we had a 1-2 minute Thunder Rosa squash Britt Baker interview. And these continually, I'm going to go continually. I don't think that's a word, but I'm going to go with it. Bizarre Jade Cargo promos where she says, all these managers are trying to get me, keep going, but I don't want a manager. No one can control me. It's like, I really don't understand what's going on there. But okay, so now we have this build toward the Britt and Sheeta thing, which, by the way, as they pointed out here, is something that was a build that existed a year ago. It's not like something that's, you know, this big long-term thing that's finally coming to fruition, really. It's kind of like something they had dropped in their lap last year. They kind of let Britt cool off at times, you know, just kind of weirdly treated her in a lot of ways. But anyway, they got that, and I'll give them that. That's like a cool match. I'm excited about that match. But there's nothing else going on. They haven't really built anything else of interest. So according to AEW, COVID's over, so they don't have that excuse anymore. So I don't want to hear that. I don't want to hear long term because, you know, it's been, you know, 16 months. So where are the plans for the women's division? It's obviously every few weeks they have some plans and then it looks cool. And then, of course, it drops off again. And it's just going to probably continue like this forever. So.
Right. Nick, can I jump in here for a sec?
No.
Okay. Go ahead then.
I wasn't talking.
Because it usually goes whoever's speaking, then we rotate.
Just go,
there.
Mike. Just
yeah.
Go.
And it's something that's very apparent because if you watch Dark and Elevation, it's like there are two or three completely distinct women's divisions that are happening too. Like all the stuff that happens on Dark and Elevation very rarely pays off on TV. Like, yeah, Jay Cargill had like a promo there, but didn't really correlate into anything, and it wasn't really building anything because she just kind of did the same thing. And then like, yeah, they had the Britt Baker winning her way up rankings, which was a very quick ascent there. It was like a 2-week thing. But then like the rest of what's going on like Dark and Elevation, at least within the women's division, I mean, it's a lot of like Big Swole. Like, remember, like she did a promo on Dark 1 week saying that she's going for the women's division. Nothing happened there. And now she's having tag team matches with either Kylan King or Red Velvet, who just kind of backed down on like this level of the card now. So it's like, yes, things are happening in the women's division, and it's something that in weeks past it felt like that these things were building to something, but really when you look at everything that's happened in the women's division on the show, other than like the pull apart during the Forbes magazine shoot that embarrassed Tony Khan, what steps have been made to further the storylines involving like these three different groups right now, or these three different angles right now? Nothing.
Yeah, no, they do one women's match, and they do one women's storyline at a time, pretty much. I do find it funny whenever people talk about, I think JR said, maybe Tony said, Forbes magazine, that's a big deal. Like, no, not a big deal. It's fake. Like, especially funny, the K-pop fandom in particular fucking goes wild when Forbes magazine writes about their favorite K-pop superstars. And Forbes magazine, which of course is not, you know, real journalists or anything, it's just bloggers who get paid by the view or whatever, and you fucking set up your little blog and then you know, write whatever is going to get people to click on it. So they write fawning stuff about BTS, and then the jillion BTS fans pass around and go, wow, this guy gets it. They understand why BTS is, you know, a revolutionary boy group. And then the guy watches his bank account goes up. So Forbes magazine is funny to me. The Jade Cargill thing is probably the most frustrating part about it, because they took Jade Cargill from this big match with Shaq on TNT, where she, you know, murdered the other girl and looked like a killer, and she looks like a superstar, and she's got good tweets. And then they just can't have her kill people on Dynamite or whatever. They have to run a hype package week after week after week that hypes her less and less and less every week. And like, yeah, this manager thing, I do, you know, I like the idea in theory of a bunch of managers bidding for her interest. I like that they brought in managers who aren't on the main roster and are like, hey, maybe I can get in on this. That's fun, but it's not on TV, so it basically doesn't happen. And also, yeah, it doesn't make any sense because she doesn't want a manager and isn't going to pay them if she gets one. I don't know. We do have Vicky Guerrero is managing Nyla Rose, who I don't know if she's still in the company, except that she's on BTE. Yeah, I just, you know, those other women are not on the show. So it's crazy to me to talk about a division when it's Hikaru Shida and her, you know, band of monthly challengers. So
listener did lead, although Nate kind of said this, but I'm going to go with it anyway, because I already put it in the sheet. Oakgan, listener Oakgan says, cannot delete anything harder than Jericho not even taking a week off after falling off a cage. Fuck out of here.
I was thinking about Oakgan earlier because when Oakgan talked about going to Bola in 2013 or whatever, and was like, yeah, some guys started a USA chant and the rest of the building entirely booed them down and stopped it. I was like, oh, wow, maybe indie wrestling is like tolerable and you can go and be in the crowd and not, you know, feel like you're surrounded by morons yelling 20-year-old Jericho WCW bits over and over. That's unrelated. I was just thinking about my friend Oaken.
Of course, Nazis also went to PWG, so it's a mixed bag.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have Nazis in every fandom.
True. All right, let's go through the rest of the show. Of course, it kicked off with Jon Moxley retaining the IWGP US title against Yuji Nagata with the Paradigm Shift. Then we had Alex Marvez with as we thought at that time, the remaining unharmed members of the Inner Circle, Ortiz, Sammy, and Jake Hager. They tell us Santana is in jail. Well, he's been detained. I guess they don't actually tell us he's in jail because he stabbed MJF with a fork, and they want a rematch. Really bad promos from Sammy and Jake Hager here.
Yeah, and like, what is Tony Khan doing if he's having a match that someone is able to go to jail for their actions within? Like, shouldn't there like be some hold harmless or like you waive?
You can't waive criminal prosecution, Mike.
Okay,
You can't. I mean, the government would have to waive that. That you know, I don't. That's a fine little way to write him off. I think that's cute. Maybe. I thought Sammy was fine.
He was bad, Nate.
He was fine, Aaron.
I can't agree with you there. We're mostly disagreeing on promos tonight, which is fine. Cody had the promo.
I think it's bad, Aaron.
Oh, okay. God damn it, Nate. yeah, the killer or the kicker, as Mike suggested earlier, is that we're going to have Cody versus Anthony Ogogo at Double or Nothing. Cody's going to be the American Dream. We got an SCU video. Once they were all family, they and the Young Bucks, now they feel betrayed, but they're motivated because they invented this step out of nowhere that they would have to break up if they lost. So they're willing to do whatever it takes. And that, of course, led to the match where they lost. Nick Jackson pinned Daniels with the BTE trigger.
I'm not very high on the BTE trigger as a finisher. They have better finishers. That's all.
Just in general, like, people doing the Kamigoye or the Golden Trigger, the only ones that I've seen that actually look impressive are Kota Ibushi's. The rest of them kind of just look like they're imitating the, it's like, hey, this is the guy's move.
Yeah. I mean, even Ibushi's doesn't look awesome a lot of the time. Also, the BTE trigger, goofy name. They have better finishers. I guess that's probably like the easiest one for them to do, so that's why they went to it.
Eddie and Mox were tearing up the Elite's locker room. Eddie stormed off, told Mox to, quote, blow up the bathroom.
Just a complete aside that was like vague. The sound was off for these backside segments. You can hear a single thing, but Moxley was going to the bathroom and Eddie was out of frame saying, yo, make sure you blow up that bathroom, all right? And that just cracked me up.
I think I've told the story on this show before about me going to Alcon, the Weird Al convention.
Yeah, there's something about his teeth.
Yeah. So my girlfriend at the time, big Weird Al fan, and she bought his wisdom teeth, I suppose. But the story I want to tell here is, as part of the convention, now this is the kicker. Weird Al did not perform at this convention, not even one time. There was a meet and greet. You could get checkies with Weird Al, but but no performance.
Weird Al 2-shot, please.
But they had other performers, I suppose musicians inspired by Weird Al. And there was this white ginger rapper who, it stuck with me all this time, but he had a song called Blow Up the Bathroom.
What a worker, Weird Al Yankovic, having a festival completely in your in your image, like your name's on the marquee, not picking up the accordion once, other than for checkies. What a worker.
The ideal version of that would be he doesn't do, you know, a big full stage, full band show, but he does like a intimate, you know, acoustic accordion set where it's like, oh, Al's going to play his, you know, most deep and soulful tracks with an accordion. And it's, you know, fucking eat it.
I was going to say eat it, but it's like slowed down.
I don't know why, but I'm imagining Extremes More Than Words being played on a very slow maudlin accordion. I feel like that would be like, this is especially for you tonight. You all have come together. It's time. I love you all more than words. And just like the accordion starts going.
I so badly wish I could remember that guy's name. Sorry, I got caught with a Dave Bautista commercial here on NBA League Pass. Yeah, so that blow up the bathroom reminded me of my trip to the Weird Al convention, where Weird Al greeted my girlfriend by name when we met him, we met him in the two-shot line.
It's just going to say it. That relationship seemed like it was on pretty firm ground, the fact that Weird Al can name your girlfriend by name.
I mean, just to ward off all the perverts, well, I don't know, but she was like 16, so.
Okay, you know. Okay, I apologize.
And to clarify, you were also around 16?
Yes, I was about 23, pretty close to 16. No, I would have been, she was actually older than me, so she was probably 17 and I was 16, if I had to guess, but in Chicago, Nate, I could have met you there.
I did, I probably mentioned this last time we talked about this, but one of my good friends from high school was like a Weird Al fan that I didn't realize. He was like mostly into like jam bands, and so he'd be like, ah, oh, fucking Umphreys and, you know, String Cheese Incident or whatever, and then come to find out years later, it's like, oh yeah, no, I've seen Weird Al 8 times. Like, what?
Yeah, man, what an experience that was. We also, I think I've probably told this story too, I'm sorry everyone, we also went to see Blessed Union of Souls once, and they also knew her by name.
And she also bought their teeth.
Yeah. Oh man, what a time. Christian had a promo. He's got an open contract next week, looking ahead to the Casino Battle Royale, which, by the way, I would just like to break, will feature Nick Gage. That's a joke, but I'm just assuming he's going to be there, and I will be complaining if Nick Gage is not in the Casino Battle Royale.
Sounds reasonable.
Bold. Thank you. Matt Seidel came out, signed the contract. And Christian said, fuck you, you fell off the turnbuckle last year.
Just like a bizarre segment. Like, just like two guys who are not strong at promos, like doing a promo, like making fun of a botch last year. Just this whole Christian thing. Like, each time he pops up, I get kind of worked up about it. But, like, what are we doing here?
No, I like Christian. They saved him with the Taz segment last week. And I thought, and Seidel overperformed for me here, because, yeah, he's not usually the best guy on this match, or in this spot, in the promo spot, but him saying, yeah, hilarious, man. I popped for that.
Pac versus Orange Cassidy is up next. This was an eliminator for the title match, but it went to a double countout after Kenny laid out Pac. Our good friends at the Fightful Patreon tell us that this was an audible, supposed to go to a 20-minute time limit draw, but Orange Cassidy got hurt, so they had to do this. But anyway, we found out afterward that it's going to be a three-way match at Double or Nothing.
I hate it. I hate a three-way for your world title. I hate doing a Cracker Barrel clash for the world title. It's goofy and stupid. Either singles match would have been much more interesting to me than a three-way.
And it's something of, the plan of going to a title limit draw lets them both have a title match does not really ring true with me. Like, if you're going to do a three-way title match and both of them should have a direct win over Kenny and say, no, I have this one. Like, it's still something I wouldn't do, but there's ways you can justify it better than saying, hey, it's a time limit draw. Well, like that, like shouldn't you then, if the rankings matter so much, shouldn't you then, since that's inconclusive, go to like the third ranked person down the list, is like, okay, since y'all went to a draw and so-and-so won their match, they should jump over you in the rankings, and that should be the title match, right? Like, am I off base in thinking that?
No, yeah, I don't like that either. you know, I do kind of respect them saying, hey, we haven't done a draw in a while. Maybe we can use a draw to a good storyline effect or something. But that, you know, that would have aggravated me when they got to the finish line anyway. Like, hey, you guys weren't able to beat each other, so now you both get a world title match. Now the champion is at a bigger disadvantage and doesn't have to be involved in the pinfall because these two guys couldn't beat each other. Hate it.
So I do not have the rankings as of May 12th. They do not have them on AEW.
I think they tweeted them, I think, about 15 minutes before Dynamite. So you probably would have to go through all their clips and shit.
No. But that would have been Jon Moxley. So that would have he was ranked number 3 going to this. If we're going with my idea that, you know, you have a draw, you're out of consideration for this year because you weren't able to have a conclusive winner. So, yeah, the match was pretty good until Pac got too awesome and looked like Orange Cassidy rung his bell on a Liger bomb. Like, I thought these two guys have great chemistry. Like, I don't doubt that this match is going to be a really solid match here. Just like deflating is the best way to put it, I would say. Like, just the fleeting thing. Did get a great image of Pac wearing Orange Cassidy's glasses. That is now a emoji in the Discord.
Realizing that because of the way our show is set up, hard for me not to talk a lot on the show. Plus, I am compelled to tell Weird Al stories. So, it's a real problem. We're in the Elite locker room. They're mad about Eddie and Mox. They said they put SCU out the pasture. Next week, they're going to wrestle the Varsity Blondes. And then a real pop out of me from Matt Jackson saying the most selfless Christian men in pro wrestling are going to do something selfish for once. And so they challenge Eddie and Mox for Double or Nothing.
Good promo.
Alex. Yes, I thought it was good. I agree. Alex Marvez with Adam Page in the Dark Order. Asked him about his loss to Cage, falling from number 1 to 5 in the rankings. Page says he can't help but think Cage didn't beat him, but Taz did from calling the shots. Says Brian Cage can't be satisfied with that. He should leave Taz and wrestle him again. And it's Double or Nothing. And John Silver says that's the name of the pay-per-view. And they have a fun little laugh about it.
Yeah, so you need John Silver for this unit. John Silver carries this unit. He comes back, and the segment is much better.
The Pinnacle Coronation was up next, which we already talked about, but... Man, on the night where Cody did that promo, Tully somehow had the most nonsensical rambling promo on the show.
That was insane. Like, talking about, you'll look at this watch and that'll remind you of what you've done. Like, just, and it was given to you by Tully Blanchard. Just a wild night of cocaine promos tonight.
The women was such a funny, like, again, it seems like something the Four Horsemen would do. Like, hey, we got some real Jacksonville ladies. But they didn't get. Were they in the ring or were they behind the rope?
They were on the apron.
So it was like they didn't really want to commit to it. They didn't want to get real sleazy with it.
I mean, one person was more than willing to, play it up.
Yeah, it was just
that was a shoot, buddy.
They had the idea and they didn't really commit to it in a kind of funny way.
One thing that I did like in the segment, since we already buried a lot, when Sean Spears was pointed out as the Canadian God, he did have a really great shit-eating grin when that happened. Like, that was a solid, it just was just an insane, period. Like, they had 4 segments in a row, with the Bucks, and then Hangman and Page, and then Pinnacle, and then Britt and JR, that just, totally all over the place. Like, just insane stretch of, 15 minutes.
You can tell by my reactions to this part of the show that after the Bucks match, I just hated everything, and everything drove me crazy. But you give a pass to the Pac and Orange Cassidy match because the dude got hurt and they had to audible a finish on the fly. If you're audibling a finish on the fly and being like, Kenny, we need you to go out and do a run-in, I guess that's successful in some way. Like you came up with a functional finish, maybe. But I was super negative on all this. And then thankfully they got to Britt, who started to turn things around.
She was with Jim Ross for a sit-down interview talking about Sheeta breaking her nose last year. Britt says, you either let it hurt you or change you. I feel like you can let it do both, to be honest. Just that's my personal aside. She let it change her, and now she's the baddest bitch in the game. So it seems like we have to build to a Britt versus Jade Cargill.
feud from that. She says Sheeta is going to get killed by the monster she created. It's been a hard year for the division, but Britt is the face of the division, and she's going to give it a pulse when she wins.
Britt is like super, super confident and poised and comfortable in this, like in a way that not a ton of pro wrestlers are. A lot of, you know, pro wrestlers, especially in this company where they're young and they don't have years of experience doing sit downs with Jim Ross or whatever, are like, yeah, I'm like acting my way through this promo. And Britt is just like fully, you know, present in herself and sincere and sounds genuine, even when she's like doing an exaggerated heel character. Just can't put over enough how good she is.
Thunder Rosa defeated Jasmine Allure with the Fire Thunder Driver. Jade Cargill's with Tony Schiavone and did her thing about managers. They had a Darby video showing where he came from and Miro saying, or him saying that Miro's going to have to admit that he's one tough son of a bitch. He also called Miro a generic son of a bitch.
Wouldn't agree with that. I did the video and the promo I thought were great. I wouldn't call him Miro generic.
No, I wouldn't either. A video again scored by friend of the show, Wickaface Brings Eternal.
You dropped that into a scoop in the Discord. And because I knew you weren't feeling well and I was concerned for you and I'm such a good friend, I refrained from saying what I'm going to say now, which is like, oh, I could tell that because I listened to it.
Well, in fairness to everyone, I heard it and then said, hey, Wickaface, did you score this? And he simply responded, yes. That's how I got the scoop.
It's got that certain something.
It does. It had the vibes that we like. And then we had the TNT title match, Darby Allin versus Miro. Miro winning with the game over. After the match, Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky attacked Sting, which they had also done during the match. But the Dark Order ran them off. Lance Archer came out apparently to challenge Miro.
Yeah, match, great. All the other stuff is like, I just like ignored it. I'm like, no, this other stuff isn't happening.
I feel like this episode of our show has really mirrored the Dynamite episode in that I feel like we brought it in the first hour for E-Lead or D-Lead, and then it's kind of gone downhill from there.
Well, I mean, we've already talked about this match. Like, what else do we really have to add here other than, like, it's kind of wild. Like, all these things were happening around this match that had, like, nothing to do with the match whatsoever, and then, you know, like, that's a thing. Archer versus Miro. That's a fun match. Like, there's a lot of ways that can go, like, in ring. Like, I'm really intrigued to see because of how Miro was kind of booked in this match, how Miro's been booked lately, how Archer's kind of booked. Like, there's some meat on the bone here that I'll be interested in seeing how this plays out.
It is a cool, like, first time match. I'm still like, I don't understand why Lance Archer is on this side of this feud now.
He loves Sting, and we see what happens.
He hated Sting, and then Sting was like, no, you're right. And now he loves Sting, and will fight and die for him.
But he didn't come out to, like, help Sting.
Yeah.
No, I mean, didn't he come out in relation to the ongoing Ethan Page and Scorpio Sky shit with Darby and Sting? Isn't that the sort of program that he's in?
I'm just saying at this particular moment, like, Sting is getting attacked and Lance Archer didn't come to help.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The Dark Order did for some reason.
Yeah. I was just like, whatever. That was a great match. I'm not going to sully it by worrying about all this extraneous business.
Yeah. As we were saying this, I've been watching the GIF of how Darby bounced off of Miro on that Lope Suicida. Just insane.
I mean, he always does. Those always are great. He, a lot of the time they're like look scarier and are even maybe better for that reason.
Right.
But that one, he fully fucking hit him and it looked awesome.
Yeah. He ricocheted off him. Like, he made contact. Like, if this was like a car wreck in F1, we would be slowing it down and seeing where the angle change at point of impact. Just probably the best Lope I've ever seen.
I want to call Ethan Page the Bill Simmons of wrestling, but I just can't commit to the take. So,
that's fair.
Can you explain the take?
Yeah. Let's sound this out here. We're no, in clapper space.
It doesn't work because I would have had to have really liked Ethan Page when I was like a freshman in college. So that doesn't work.
That's late for liking Bill Simmons.
I don't think so.
No, I think that's
like 2003.
Oh, I was my, oh, 2003. You're fair there. Okay.
Yeah, my roommate in and post grad was like still way in on Simmons, so I was still like dipping in, and he still would have pretty good interview subjects a lot of the time, but yeah, I definitely remember like I had ESPN the magazine for some reason, and I remember when he like debuted on the last page of that or whatever was it the second page? Anyway, it was definitely like last page.
Yeah, over last for Rick page. Riley. Rick Riley. Yeah, used there you to go. Be it. Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's the column you look forward to at the end. You're like, oh, I went through the whole issue, and now I get the little fun dessert on top.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it really doesn't work, but I just wanted to make fun of Ethan Page and Bill Simmons together. So
it worked. It worked there, Big Cat. We got there in the end.
All right. If you want to support the show because of all these great comparisons that I've been making, best way to do so is head over to patreon.com/everythingelite and subscribe. We have three tiers. The big difference is the $8 tier gets you the live instant reaction to Dynamite every week, the live free show, plus the replay that lives forever. That's the main difference. This week, we had a look at the Nightmare Factory produce show number 2 with our friends, the Spears Boys.
Yeah, so Drew and I wrote again. There was another AEW-affiliated student produce show. A lot of just different things happening on this show versus the first one. And then what we not as much talk necessarily on this show, but then we kind of, I think it was like the last 20 minutes kind of talking about how Drew viewed the indies coming forward, especially coming out of COVID. And a big topic was kind of PWG and that. But I mean, it's one of my, like my favorite things to do, to hang out with my brother. We watch like people at, have either their first matches or what they're claiming are their first matches until you do a little bit of research and realize that they were trained by Ken Anderson. But, you know, it was a good time.
Next week, I hate to say it because we have an idea that's percolating, but it's not clear to me whether it's all going to come together for Monday.
I think see,
it all comes down to the technical side. I think we've got it all sorted except if the technical side can happen or not.
I think I could. I think I have time to pull this off, so I think we can do this on the weekend, so we can announce it now. Yeah.
Okay, I guess we'll announce it. So we're going to be doing a licensed theme draft episode. I'm not selling this very well. The idea is we have already behind the scenes drafted AEW roster members, and on this show we will propose new licensed themes for each of them. You know, Tony Khan obviously all in on licensing music right now. So we're going to give some free idea, not free, $5.
That's right, Tony, you got to pay the big bucks.
To Tony Khan to get some themes for these people. So, and one of the fun parts will be that if it all works out technologically, it will be a surprise to the other two. Like if it's my turn, they know who I've picked, but if I say, okay, here's mine, and then we'll play the song and then, you know, we'll get some real reactions to the songs.
Yeah, we just they had Wild Thing on this show. Interested to see if they keep that going forward with Moxley. You know, I we've said from the beginning of this podcast, or I've said that the in-house music is not one of the promotion's strong points, and licensed music is a great way to solve that and also differentiate yourself from WWE because they, you know, would never, could never. So. Yeah, just came up. I mostly came up with this idea because I thought of a better song for Orange Cassidy. And then I was like, oh, I just want to pitch this.
I have about half of mine figured out. There's one group that I'm still trying to figure out. Actually, there's one draft pick I'm still trying to figure out. But yeah, this was a really kind of interesting draft, and I'll be interested to see y'all's picks and your reasoning behind those. Because there's a couple of them that were a little bit like, oh, okay, so I'll be interested in hearing what your better than Pixies pick is for Orange Cassidy.
Well, it's not necessarily a better song. It's almost really not a better song, but it's more appropriate, I think. I'm interested to see, because I'm wondering like if Aaron's just going to hit me with some shit that I've never heard, and I'll be like, okay, I don't really know how to react to this, so that's going to be fun. If it works at all, then we can go down the rest of the roster on future episodes and then like really be scraping the bottom of the barrel, like, who am I going to pick for Kylan King? I don't know. This is hard.
I mean, I I'm willing to guess that at least some of my picks I've already figured out, Nate, just because I follow you on Spotify. I've seen your playlists here. There's a couple genres you don't really feature a lot on this that I'm going to be using. So I'll be interested to see your, okay, response to some of it.
I just want everybody to know that I bravely chose my wrestlers without having any ideas for their music. So I will have to now, and as of Wednesday night, I still haven't come up with any ideas for their music. So I have depots through Friday. So sometime maybe Friday afternoon, I'll start thinking about, or Friday evening, I'll start thinking about this.
I'll say this. I feel like that Nate's going to wash us here. I mean,
oh, for sure. Yeah, for sure.
This is probably, I'm getting close.
Okay,
to my...
now this is your again. That was, oh, Nate's going to win the trivia game. We're all betting against Aaron. And then, you know, we saw what happened. So I'm not falling for this again.
I mean, I'm the person who famously did not listen to music until I was in middle school.
Okay, so first of all, you're not famous for that because I didn't know that. And it's super weird.
We have talked about this before. Aaron, haven't we discussed this?
We have. The first music you listened to was AC/DC.
Okay, yeah, that was on Light, right?
I don't know. Mike and I talk a lot, so yeah. I mean, on podcast, so it's hard to say, really.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't think I've been present on a podcast where that was discussed. AC/DC, I would describe as almost not music. It's like, I guess it's good as an introduction because it's like, well, you know, like loud noises. We're like, right, here's what happens if you start to organize those loud noises in like a sequence of notes.
Very far away from this take. I'm running from this.
And then you can get like more abstract from there.
Yeah.
You know, it's not, you know, it's AC/DC is closer to noise than Beethoven is what I'm saying.
Right. Yeah. And it's something that my collection of my first CDs, like, it's something that is hilariously bad. The first five CDs I bought were AC/DC Back in Black, the Best of Weird Al Yankovic albums, volumes one and two, Michael Jackson's History.
Okay, so hold on. That was the second album you bought. So you bought that despite not knowing any of the songs that he was parodying?
Like, I have familiarity to music. I just did not listen to music.
Well, you did,
like,
say you didn't listen to music. So.
Yeah. I just didn't. I knew who Michael Jackson was.
I fucking love the idea of somebody buying parody albums without knowing the song. Now,
I was 12.
Made my day.
I was 12. I'm almost 35.
This Edith song is so good. What a fucking great beat. This guy's a genius.
Listen, I've always been this dumb, if not more dumb. Hey, that was just
okay. So three was Michael Jackson. Yeah. What was four?
So we've had four albums there because it's Back in Black.
Weird Al was two.
Yeah, two volumes there, and then Michael Jackson History, another double album there, and then
okay, that's really cheating.
I know. I mean, someone as dumb as me going through this. Number five was I got Back in Black and I'm trying to think what was the other AC/DC album I got, because I got two AC/DC albums. Two of them. It wasn't just Back in Black. It was the one that had Shoot the Thrill on it. So
I'll just say that Back in Black fucking rocks. It's on the Rolling Stone list. And I have divided all the albums into five tiers.
Okay.
As I've listened to them because
are they named with an appropriate number of stars?
I mean,
it was Highway to Hell. Highway to Hell and Back in Black. So Yeah,
it's not really a star system. It's one is I love this album. Two is I really like this album, but there's just something that's not quite there. Three, I like it. Four, I don't like it. Five, it's fucking trash. So Back in Black, tier two, baby. Great album. Excellent album. Love it.
I think I don't. So my first CD for sure was the Gangsta's Paradise CD single.
Good one.
And then the next two, I don't know which order they came in, but it was Green Day, Dookie, and Tchaikovsky's Greatest Hits.
Sure. My first CD, without question, was Warren G, Regulate G-Funk Era.
Oh, that's even better than Gangsta's Paradise.
I had the full album of Gangsta's Paradise.
Meanwhile,
Dangerous Minds soundtrack,
sure. Yeah. Mike was listening to Amish Paradise, like, what a fucking beat. This guy, he can do it all, every genre.
It's not that I never heard of Coolio or Gangsta's Paradise. It's just I did not like seek out music as a kid.
I choose not to accept that.
I prefer
my headcanon.
Yeah, I mean the only albums I heard like riding in the car as a kid was Bob Seger, Shania Twain, the one Shania Twain album, and then my mom listened to America and Saturday Night Fever soundtrack. So like
Bob Seger.
Yeah.
Love Bob Seger.
Oh, like later. Like as a kid, I did not necessarily care for Bob Seger. Now I'm like,
I think old time rock and roll was my first ever favorite song. Like when I was a child. Old time rock and roll would come on and I'd be like, yeah, that's the shit. Turn it up. Then I'm like a child in the family van.
Sure. That there is, I don't know if it's still up on YouTube, but Hollywood Nights, there's isolated vocals of just Seger going off on it. And it is like hauntingly kind of beautiful in a way. Cause it has like his riffs going like, oh yeah. Like doing that stuff, like vamping. Hauntingly beautiful.
I believe it.
That will not be someone's
my
thing.
My first favorite songs, either Aaron Tippin, You Gotta Stand for Something or You'll Fall for Anything, or Travis Tritt, Here's a Quarter, Call Someone Who Cares.
rude, Travis.
Yeah. Looking at the Dangerous Minds soundtrack, Big Mike got a song on there, the New Orleans rapper, and Rappin' Forte also had a song.
Rappin' Forte.
Yeah. Bay Area guy.
Okay.
Yeah.
I remember the Dangerous Minds music video.
Oh yeah.
And Michelle Pfeiffer sitting backwards in the chair with Coolio all up in her grill.
I'm sorry. Forte had two songs on the soundtrack. Also there was a song called Gin and Juice. That was not Gin and Juice by Dr. Dre and Tupac and Snoop Dogg. Very sure. Funny.
Anyway. Personal friend of Cody Rhodes, Snoop Dogg.
So
yes. Exactly.
So I'm looking at the listings from the Greatest Hits Volume 2 of Weird Al Yankovic. Starting off with Headline News, a parody of Crash Test Dummies. Bedrock Anthem, a parody of Under the Bridge and Give It Away.
Oh, yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, and then we had Original Medley, Who Cares, Smells Like Nirvana, Achy Breaky Song, The Theme to UHF, Money for Nothing, Jurassic Park, which was a cover of MacArthur Park by Richard Harris. So that's
my mother's favorite song is MacArthur Park.
Yoda, and then a song that like this album was released in 1994.
Just you don't need to parody. Later. You don't need to parody MacArthur's Park. It's already a parodical song.
Yeah, but here's the last track here. It's a style parody of Christmas carols. It's arranged like the Wall of Sound. The title of this song, "Christmas at Ground Zero," 1994.
Wow, what did Weird Al know?
Yeah, I'm just saying. He
predicted both 9/11 and Warren Spector? Is his first name Warren?
No.
Spector? Phil Spector.
Phil Spector. Yeah.
Warren Spector is the Deus Ex guy, I think.
yes, that is Warren Spector.
Phil Spector.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find this on the internet, but Weird Al signed like some insane record contract.
Yeah, like
like a million albums that he had to do. Anyway, the point of this is to subscribe to our Patreon. We'll have Double or Nothing stuff kicking off soon. All right, next week on Dynamite, taped Serena D versus Thunder Rosa. Was that for the NWA title? Did I miss that?
No, Serena
no,
D has...
Didn't she lose it? Does Camille have it or something?
No. The current thing
here happened... is one thing I promise the listeners. I will never fucking watch NWA.
Power.
Never.
No. So the storyline is that if she loses to Camille, she has to only wrestle in NWA. And next week it is versus...
But does she have the title? I don't think... Thunder doesn't have the title. Who has it?
It is NWA Women's World Championship, Serena Deeb versus Red Velvet next week. Red Velvet.
So does Deeb have it?
Yes, Deeb has it. It's a return from injury.
Okay.
Wait, she's not wrestling Thunder Rosa next week? I made that up?
Yes, you did. It's Red Velvet.
Okay. So...
And it is a NWA World's Women's title match.
Okay.
It's tag titles, Young Bucks versus the Varsity Blondes, Christian Cage versus Matt Sydal, Anthony Ogogo versus Austin Gunn. A very weird card.
I mean,
very upset that Austin Gunn's going to lose now. They put all this time into protecting the Gunn Club, giving them all these wins. Main event wins on Dynamite, and then finally bring him back to Dynamite, only for him to lose. I mean, I can't be too mad because, you know, I'm all in on Anthony Ogogo, and I hope he knocks Cody's head off. But too bad that Austin Gunn has to be collateral damage.
Yeah, why couldn't it be Colton? I mean, Colton's right there. We all love Austin. We don't care for Colton.
I love that the YouTube, of course, is like slightly behind when we're talking. So after we'd figured out that I fucked that up, it's like, it's Red Velvet. And then Doris is like, Deeb's the champion. But it's like, I didn't see that at the time because there's like a minute lead time or something like that. Okay, here's what we know for Double or Nothing. May 30th, the Women's World Title, Hikaru Shida versus Britt Baker, Hangman Page versus Brian Cage. Google Docs automatically changes Brian to Brain every time.
Yeah.
And Brain Cage is just like the funniest shit to me because obviously he's dumb. So it's just very funny.
News Cage. Right.
Cody Rhodes versus Anthony Ogogo and the Men's World Title, Kenny Omega versus Pac versus Orange Cassidy. The first triple threat, is that right?
Cracker Barrel Clash for the World Title.
Yeah. I should bring that back.
It has the rules are exactly the same as the Cracker Barrel Clash. There's no difference in the rules, so
will there be a barrel? That's the only question. That's the only determination between a triple threat match and a Cracker Barrel Clash, right, Nate?
Kenny should have Don bring the barrel out.
I mean, you say that, but that means Doc Gallows is going to wear the barrel.
And then Michael Nakazawa should be in the barrel.
Right, yeah. So Doc Gallows wearing the barrel. He has the suspenders on to wear the barrel. Michael Nakazawa pops out halfway through.
Like a kangaroo carrying around his young.
Exactly.
Her young, I guess. Yeah, this is a money idea. They have not yet leveraged what would obviously be a great pairing, especially comedically, in Doc Gallows and Michael Nakazawa. I think that's big money. I think that could be, you know, that could at least drive ratings on Impact.
Saw some kangaroos at the zoo when I went a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
These motherfuckers, they can jump so far. They cover so much ground. It's wild.
Yo, you know those animals that we know, these marsupials that we know have like preternaturally strong legs? They can jump.
Yeah, that was me. I was watching them jump, and I was like, damn, you can really jump.
That's I absolutely believe that. I did go to the zoo, and I saw these fuckers, giraffes. These guys' necks are so long. They're crazy. You would not believe. They go all the way. Like, you're down on the ground, and their necks are, like, up eating from the trees. It is wild.
Okay, I think this is a little unfair. I don't think it's as well known how much kangaroos can jump. I think that's specialized knowledge that comes from visiting your local zoo that has kangaroos.
I'm trying to think. Of course, I think the big touchstone for kangaroos for everyone is probably Kangaroo Jack, the movie with Anthony Anderson.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if he jumps in that. I just can't.
Did Anthony Anderson get canceled? Is that right?
I think he got half-assed canceled, but is still on.
Yeah,
probably a bunch of television shows.
I thought he got canceled like years before cancellation and it reared again.
Yeah, I think that probably sounds right.
He was so good in The Shield.
He was so good in the Steven Seagal and DMX movie, whichever one that was.
I forgot.
Big star turn from Anthony Anderson.
I forgot he was in Romeo Must Die and Cradle to the Grave.
I don't know if he was in both of those, but he was definitely in. Oh, you're talking about DMX.
No, I'm talking about Anthony Anderson.
I didn't know that either.
So he was canceled before, then something came up in 2018 that canceled him again, but charges were not pressed.
There we go. Blackish. He might still be on Blackish, according to Danny in the YouTube chat.
Can't believe that still exists. Wild. Okay, well, I think that's the show for this week. Make sure you're following us on Twitter at @EverythingAEW. I'm at Aaron Like the Car. Nate's at Epitasis. Mike's at Fuji Heya. Subscribe to the podcast. Give us a 5-star rating and review on the Apple Podcasts app. And of course, subscribe at patreon.com/everythingelite. That's it for Mike, for Nate.